Hi, it's Nalco. Do you have loved ones that are getting older and maybe starting to need help? Taking care of aging loved ones can definitely feel overwhelming, especially if you're in the sandwich generation where you're also raising young children and working full-time. So where do we begin with this? Our webinar, Caregiving Questions Answered, tackled some common concerns. You can find that webinar on the Bright Horizons website. Our very own Andrew Wicks Bowles joined Charlene New from Mature Caregivers to answer some additional questions that came up from our audience.
You're listening to The Work-Life Equation, the Bright Horizons podcast for busy working families. Whether you're a working mom, a dad, or you're busy caring for other family members, we've got tips for how to fit jobs and families together and for how to make your work-life equation add up.
There were several important follow-up questions from our webinar. One of them was, when you're considering a potential in-home caregiver for, say, your aging parent, what are some of the factors you should be thinking about? Charlene gets us started.
I'm going to take this one because I actually deal with this every day in my job. The first thing I would say is interview. You want to make sure that it's the right fit. It really is about the relationship between the caregiver and your parent. The second thing is you want to do a background check for employment, criminal history, traffic. You know, if the person's going to be driving your parent, you want to make sure that they've got a good driving record and that their car is safe. You want to talk to some of the people that they used to work for and get a sense of what they did well or some of the things that they might have found that weren't quite so great. Many states have a registry of caregivers, so you can go in and check and see if their license is valid or if there's been any things that have gone against them. And I would say that it's the same question that you want to ask if you're going to hire an agency. Because at the end of the day, you are having a person who is going to be spending an hour, 2 hours, 24 hours a day with your older loved one. And you want to make sure that it's a good fit and that your older loved one's safe, that the person who's taking care of them can do their job. You want to make sure there's a written record each day when somebody works, what happened, what didn't happen. You can also install a camera if you're feeling like I want to be able to check up on what's really happening when my loved one is in the home. For those of you who have kids, it's the same process as how you're going to figure out who's going to take care of your kids.
When we think about in-home care providers, it's often an important resource for allowing that older loved one to remain in their home. So for some, the loved one may not want an in-home care provider, and frankly, it could be a bit of a negotiation. Mom, for you to stay here and live alone, we've got to have someone come into the home. So having those conversations is important. And it also depends on the status of your mom in this case. For example, you might need someone to come into the home just a couple of hours a day, make sure that there's lunch that she's eating, leave dinner available to her to microwave, or make sure and help her get out of bed in the morning. Or you might need someone to be there all day, every day. When you think about meeting these potential in-home providers, obviously your mom's got to meet them too. So there's got to be some connection. So helping mom know, look, she's going to come by, check her out, decide if you kind of like chatting with her and if you feel comfortable having her around. But Charlene, I had a question for you. I thought that there were like two differences, if not more, in terms of the level of home health aid. For example, if someone comes into the home to care for your mom, they're not giving medicine, they're not giving her a bath, they're not changing catheters or doing any medical access. That's one level of home health care provider. If someone actually needs to be involved in some of the health-related care, that's a different level. Is that not right?
So it's kind of a broad question because some people categorize caregivers as companions, caregivers, home health aides, certified nursing assistants, LPNs, which are licensed practical nurses, RNs, which are registered nurses. You don't want too much care. You don't want too little care. You want just enough care. However, if your parent needs somebody to talk to, and you're hiring somebody to keep them socialized, to take them out for errands, to go grocery shopping, to do light housekeeping, traditionally that could be considered to be a companion role. People who are companions may or may not have experience as a certified nursing assistant or home health aide, but that may be fine for what the person needs right now. if your mom or your dad or somebody else who's older in your life needs more personal care, or sometimes called ADLs, activities of daily living, and really needs to focus on toileting, showering, transferring from a chair to a wheelchair, a chair to a bed, et cetera, you really do want to have somebody that's trained in how to do that. And generally those are found with people who've got certification as a home health aide, a certified nursing assistant.
And the best way to actually have that assessment is through a geriatric care manager?
I would say having somebody either independently, like a geriatric care manager, or somebody from an aging service access point, or somebody at a doctor's office who has a good sense of where your parent is.
To do the assessment of your older loved one.
Exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who can help figure out what level in-home care provider you might need at this time. And I think that is important, mm-hmm. because if you don't need a nurse, then you don't want to have to pay for a nurse. Down the road, you might actually need a nurse. The other thing to keep in mind is, depending on your older loved one, it might be that you need more than one person. Not at the same time, but in the day. You don't want the same person working 100 hours a week to be with your mom. And that's one of the advantages of going through an agency. It makes it a lot easier to have multiple individuals come into the home over time. But those are some ways to think it through.
Speaking of funds and finances, one webinar viewer asked, what if your older loved ones can't pay for care? Are there ways to find funds? How do we afford getting older?
There are some traditional groups that are out there, churches, community-based organizations like the Rotary, the Elks. But, you know, there are some government programs that are out there. So if you are a veteran or you're the spouse of a veteran, there are benefit programs. You would have to go through an application process for that. Medicaid is in every state. There are different parameters for different levels for Medicaid funding and different programs that they'll provide for. If you have home ownership, there are reverse mortgages that are an option for you to try and take a look at. The Aging Service Access Point, which is the state organizations where the federal funds flow out of, all of those places are where I would start. Two other ideas are contacting the city or town you live in. There should be an elder affairs department, council, whatever the designation is. And the same thing on a state level, there generally is a division of elder services.
I think that all of those are really important resources, and it's typically an income eligible access point. So it really does depend on the income level of your older loved ones. So it is absolutely worth checking out. And I know from personal experience with nursing homes, for example, oftentimes you need to simply demonstrate the ability for that older loved one to pay for the first 6 to 8 months. And then is it Medicare or Medicaid kicks in?
So Medicare handles the medical part. So if you are in a medical facility for a medical diagnosis, you get 100 days of Medicare paid for. And then after, if you need to be in a long-term care facility, it's where Medicaid kicks in, which is a state-run program shared with the feds.
And that's a funded service. So again, making all these phone calls seems like a lot of work, but make sure you're accessing and utilizing everything you have coming to you, particularly if you're a vet. So that was a good idea, Charlene. Thanks.
Many people also asked, how do I create time in my schedule to find the resources for my aging parents when I'm already working full-time and trying to take care of my kids?
This is one of those where there's a lot of different ways to approach dealing with what you've just described. One, and I'll start, is where do you go for information on services and resources for an older loved one in their community? And that's an important piece, obviously. So if you're in Pittsburgh and your older loved one is in Chicago, you need to find out what Chicago has to offer for your mother who lives there. Now, if you're working, many employers provide what's called an EAP program. And that program includes, typically, access to what's called consultation and referral. It's speaking to someone whose expertise is in elder care and gerontology, and that individual also has a database of resources available to older adults in Chicago. So the answer is to check to see if your employer or your spouse or your siblings employer. It just someone in the family works for a company that has EAP access, and then having them call that 800 number and speaking to someone who can give you access to referrals in Chicago. Now, in terms of how do you make time in your busy life, which includes work, family, and personal well-being, this is another reminder that it really does take a village. Accessing your siblings and your other family members, this might be one of those resources that your sister, who really doesn't like being around the rest of the family, maybe she'll make all these phone calls and sort it out. You're the one who lives closest to mom. You're the one who's going to be doing some of the interviewing. Who knows? But let your sister make 50 million calls. Identify resources. Find out what's available. Many of these places have tip sheets and suggestions to make it easier to move forward. That would be my suggestion. Charlene, anything to add?
I think those are great. As I mentioned, I'm a geriatric care manager, and it's a national organization. It's a certification organization. And they have a website, and you can find out contacts in every state and do some research. Take a look at that. It's kind of like a concierge. It's kind of like the person who's going to take the load off your shoulders and come up with programs and resources and present them to you and ask you, is this what you want to do? Is this how you want to do it?
What's the website?
ALCA.org. ALCA.org. And it stands for Aging Life Care Association.
One of the more difficult questions that came up was, what happens when you're trying to talk to your older loved one about changes that need to be made? For example, giving up their car, moving to an assisted living facility, paying and using their money for care, and they don't even want to engage in the conversation. How do you begin to proceed?
That is a hard one. We heard a lot from the participants in our webinar. First of all, it is not uncommon for an older loved one to frankly not want to deal with it. From their perspective, they're waking up each morning, eating, living, and, you know, I'm good. Especially if I'm in my own home or apartment or where I'm most comfortable. So I personally can understand it, and I could be in that category in the next 30 years, to be very honest with you. The other thought, however, is you may not be the right person to have this conversation. I can remember with my dad, who lived alone at this point in a house with staircase up to the second floor and the third floor, and the bathroom was on the second floor, and he had Parkinson's, etc. He used to come over and hang out on Sundays and watch football. And frankly, it was my husband who informally was talking to him. You know, so what's happening? How's it going? How do you manage X, Y, and Z? And that's how I learned a little bit about how my father was coping with some difficult issues. So I encourage you to broaden the access to conversations with other family members and loved ones, making it easier for your older loved one to speak to and get information about possible next steps regarding their health and well-being. Charlene?
Sometimes, quite frankly, the family member is not the right person to have the conversation. Sometimes it might be a clergy or the person's best friend from grade school that they've known each other for 70 years. Or it could be the doctor. Sometimes it just doesn't work for you to be able to have that conversation. And I think what's important to take away from that is that you have to plan and you have to think about who the best person is and whether it's good for you to be able to have that conversation or just give that opportunity over to somebody else who's more comfortable in it. There may not always be an answer right away for this. Sometimes you just kind of have to sit on it, think about it, let things play out a little bit, take the time to figure out what you want to do, when you want to do it, and how you want to do it. That conversation you're going to remember for the rest of your life, and you want to make sure that you do it kindly and compassionately and with dignity and respect, but also while ensuring that your parent or your other senior loved one is safe and well cared for.
To the extent that you can, though, here's...
Yes, I agree.
This is the hard part. We obviously have been giving this a lot of thought in preparation for this podcast. The bottom line is, if your older relative does not have dementia, they have jurisdiction over what will and will not happen and when it will or will not happen. And that is hard. You love your mom. You know that she's in a place that maybe she should move into a safer environment if she would just listen and allow me to X, Y, and Z. I think that Charlene talks about how to have those conversations, and I shared with you strategies to maybe make it possible. But at the end of the day, it is up to the older loved one to decide if and when they will proceed, either in a housing change or move forward in a power of attorney and some of the suggestions we're making overall. And I just want to remind, as caregiver, that is part of your role. You have to find a way to be okay with your mom perhaps not doing what's in her best interest at this time. I think about my son who's a teenager and they're, you know, I can ask him not to do things or make sure he does or does not have access to things, but there comes a point where it's going to be on him to make those decisions. Well, your mother-in-law, again, if she does not have dementia, it is her choice, it is her decision point. And that's something we as caregivers have to find a way to accept and feel okay about. And then, as Charlene points out, have a plan, have plan B ready, because at some point it'll be time to move to the next level.
Driving is always a tough one because many older folks feel that it's part of their independence. But let's say they agree to give up their car. What kind of transportation options are available?
Transportation is so critical because it's not about making sure your older loved one is safe. It's about also enabling them to continue to be engaged. And that could be going shopping every Thursday, and it might be going to the senior center to play bridge. You want to ensure that can continue to happen.
So there are a wide range of opportunities, I think, in many places for transportation. Some cities and towns offer taxi vouchers that are reduced, that people would pay $2.50 a ride up to 10 rides per month. Some of the ride-sharing services like Uber and Lyft, and I think there's a couple of new ones that are coming online. If your loved one is tech-savvy and they've got a smartphone, they can have the app on their own phone. If not, you can put the app on your phone and do the ordering of the services. There are certainly private people that you can hire to drive somebody around. Again, in many cities, towns, states, there are local transportation alternatives, metropolitan area transportation options. And then some community organizations offer buses that go, you know, once a week from the town hall over to grocery shopping or for different trips. And in some cases, there are some doctor's offices that may provide some transportation options if the person is no longer driving. So,
and the best way to tap into what might be available in your community is, again, contacting the Aging Services Access Point or contacting the doctor who specializes in older adults and providing care for them. But I have to acknowledge there are parts of the United States, however, where transportation is absolutely a challenge. And in fact, it's a barrier for older adults. So it's a very real issue area. I don't want to imply accessing the right resource and it's not a problem. Keep in mind, transportation is also a nice way to keep socialization engaged. So if your mother-in-law lives in Oklahoma, next time you're out there, identifying one or two individuals, places, friends that might be willing to provide transportation, even if it's twice a month, to allow your mother-in-law to get out of the house and to stay engaged. That's an important gift that you can offer and something that maybe you can facilitate and make happen.
One viewer asked for suggestions on how to downsize her parents' belongings. Would a pre-estate sale be good in this situation?
Keep in mind, once you start tinkering with the home and the items in the home, that can be incredibly personal. So first of all, wait until your older loved one says, we got to get rid of some of this stuff. I want to either move to a smaller place or I'm feeling crowded and I don't want all this stuff. It's got to come from their need to have it moved, first of all. But Charlene has some pretty cool ideas, especially about how to engage siblings and create some memories from it.
One of the things I think that's really important is to be able to go in the house and have people in the family or friends or loved ones go in and put a little tag on what they want so that you know that it's going to a good home, it's somebody wants it, and that the last person in the house isn't burdened with all of these pieces of furniture or articles of clothing or dishes that they either don't want or they don't have space for. I think if space is an issue, take a picture of the item, make it into a photograph and do a little bit of a story around it so that it's a memento that continues to follow your family. I think it's an opportunity to give somebody who might need a dining room table or a car. And I think, you know, having that person be able to explain why this is so important. Gives the person who's giving away the item to see their possessions, belongings, going to somebody who really benefits from having that in their life. And I think kind of paying it forward with an item that can benefit somebody really makes the process a little bit easier and a little bit less daunting. Andrea had another good suggestion that while all of this is going on, when the actual move is taking place, that probably it's good to be out of the house because it can be so emotional. Again, if none of those options are viable for you or for the older person in your life, there are professional move managers who will come in and who will get involved. Somebody who knows how to run an estate sale, somebody who's a collector who will come in and do an assessment of the collection. There are the haul services that will take everything away.
How do you find them?
You can go online and put in professional haul services, move managers. There is a National Association of Move Managers that's out there.
It's fairly straightforward.
Okay,
yeah. Cool.
And what about older loved ones with dementia? What are some of the best ways to help?
Dementia is a big word. There's not a start and an end. There may be signs of dementia that you begin to become aware of, and over time it gets worse. There's a bit of a journey of dementia, if you will, and in the early days, your older loved one might continue to be able to remain at home and doing their thing, but it's something you're going to look out for. At any rate, having a higher level of comfort about dementia in general and its experience for older loved ones is one way to remove the mystique around the experience. Charlene, are there some suggested ways to sort of understand dementia in general and then have a better sense of what to expect over time?
I think it's important when you're talking about dementia to remember the individual first and the disease secondly. The truth is, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, it doesn't define them. And so I think oftentimes what gets lost in this whole discussion is the person, and it's not the dementia patient, it's Joe, who has dementia. And I think that's one of the most important things that people should remember. The second is there are support services. There are ways to continue to live in the community or to find a community that can provide care. Talk about it. I think it's one of those things that it's a difficult conversation to have, but all of us are touched in some way. Everybody in this room has been touched by dementia. There are organizations like the Alzheimer's Association. There's a couple of other groups that are out there, AIM, which is the Alzheimer's in Action. And there are local-based organizations and support groups that can help you find the resources that are out there in the community. One of the best things that's happening these days is something called a memory cafe. It's a great opportunity. It's generally for an hour to an hour and a half a month for you to go or a caregiver to go to find a community of caregivers while the person with dementia or Alzheimer's is finding a community of people who are experiencing the same things that they are experiencing.
So they both go.
Oh, nice. It's a program, so I've gone to quite a few. One was on dance, and the best part was watching people get up and dance who don't move anymore, but they heard the music and they started snapping their fingers and moving their feet, and they were in a wheelchair and people were wheeling them around. It became a moment of joy where people could get out of their roles of caregiver and the person being cared for to be able to just forget about the diagnosis for even an hour to continue to do something that they really loved to be able to do.
So I keep asking you this, but I think it's important. How would someone find a memory cafe? Because keep in mind, let's just say I live in New York and my mom's in Chicago and she's the one with dementia. So I know she's got a best friend who'd happily take her, but how do I figure that out?
Sure. So I would just Google memory cafes. And again, I would go back to the Council on Aging. I think you can also go in and take a look at some of the social service organizations that are out there. The Alzheimer's Association is a wealth of information.
Yeah, they really are. They also have a department within the Alzheimer's Association that specializes in leveraging employer access. So, as again, look throughout your family tree and have everybody go to their human resources and say, hey, do we have any kind of a benefit through the Alzheimer's Association? The classic You Are Not Alone cannot be understated. There are a lot of best practices. There are a lot of resources. There really are. And there are many who have come before you that have shared their experiences so that your older loved one might go through the process in a more positive, streamlined way, being able to live their full selves for as long as possible. So again, I do encourage all the ideas that Charlene is saying, but that Alzheimer's Association in particular, see if you might have access to some sort of an employer benefit that might be able to facilitate this process.
For some people, this is sudden. You wake up one day and find yourself in a caregiving situation. Andrea and Charlene offered encouragement and final thoughts.
If you're listening to this, you're getting some information that might be valuable. Please be sure and share it with others. There's one thing we have in common, and that is most, if not all of us, have families, and we're all getting older. And if we can't be a culture that makes it possible for people to get older yet continue to live full lives, then we really are doing our own selves a disservice. A lot of the agencies and services that Charlene talked about sort of subscribe to this construct and make it possible to share these best practices. So I encourage you, if you're listening, and if you heard something of value, make it available to others.
There can be a lot of heartache in the aging process, but there can also be a lot of joy and a lot of gratification. Opening your mind up to the opportunities and the possibilities is really essential. Taking care of the person, but also remembering to take care of yourself, because you are important. You have a lot of responsibilities and you are making all of this work. You know, go to the movies, go for a walk, shut your phone off, take your dog for a walk, and offer the same to the person who you're caring for, because there's a lot of joys and things that they miss, and make some of those things possible.
Caregiving is not easy, but there are many resources to help you. Again, you can find more information in our webinar, Caregiving Questions Answered.
If you like what you heard today, get more of our podcast by subscribing. While you're downloading, let us know what you thought or give us a share. Thanks to everyone for being here. We look forward to seeing you next time as we help make the work-life equation add up.